hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host, Mona Sheikh. You guys, how are you? James, Tim, everybody tuning in. Very lovely to see you guys. Guys, today is a pretty heavy-duty topic, you know. Hey, Yolanda, nice to see you. Sick of you, girl. No, I love seeing your face. Thank you. Welcome back. Today's topic is a bit heavy-duty. I'm going to try to keep it light, but I don't know how to. I'm going to try. Hopefully, I won't fall on my face and suck. But, you know, you and I know anyone who has a pulse and a brain in America and who's been following the past 4 years of the dumpster fire of a president that we've had, that children who were separated at the border, about, what, approximately 500 of them, their parents could not be located. And, you know, these children are just kind of stuck in a limbo. The parents are gone. Parents can't be located. They're probably deported already. So I really wanted to kind of get an insight on as to what happens to these kids. Like, what is their future? Do they get sent back and the parents have to go squirming looking for these kids? Like, what happens? So I wanted to invite a very accomplished individual who's a he goes by the immigration professor, which I totally love that title. I think it's a really badass title. This person, he started back in 1989 as an immigration attorney, and not too shabby. He graduated magna cum laude from Beloit College, and he received his JD, also magna cum laude, from the University of Illinois. So, and he specializes in deportations and including asylums and cancellation of removals. And I thought it would be a good idea to bring him on and kind of get an insight. So I would like to welcome Robert Perkins. How are you?
I can't complain. Like I told you, I live in Southern California. I'm originally from Chicago. So to me, it's relatively warm. So I like it. And, I'm very glad. See, I have my cup of Joe now. I wanted to, I'm very happy that very soon we'll be seeing some serious changes in policy. I don't know if you wanted to get into some of the changes that we will see at some point in the broadcast.
But
I'm very, very happy, very relieved. And a lot of my clients are very relieved that this presidency is almost over. So
right. Absolutely. I mean, now you, I got acquainted with you through a very dear friend of mine, Shane Bindania. Shout out to Shane for connecting us. Shane is working his way to becoming an immigration lawyer. And he told me about what a nightmare it has been for him and his clients. So I want to know, for your clients, what kind of nightmare has it been? I mean, have they been getting deported? Have their cases just been getting rejected? Like, what has been happening?
A lot of changes. It's interesting, but immigration, the law itself really hasn't changed because it's hard to pass any legislation in the United States, given the animosity between the two political parties. Really, the only major piece of legislation besides some economic help for people, it was Obamacare, right? That's the only big thing that's ever been done in any recent time. But what we have seen are changes in regulation and policy, and those changes make a big difference. I mean, the one you mentioned, obviously, children being separated from their parents, that's a biggie. That relates to another one. President Obama, for example, before he left office, he did something really, in my mind, terrific, which was he signed an executive order to get rid of private prisons. There's corporations, a couple of them, that operate detention centers where they detain immigrants, including many of which are claiming asylum in the United States. They're non-criminals, and they're put in jail. And these jails are worse. These privately operated corporations are worse than regular prisons. Why do you ask me, Robert, why are they worse? Mm-hmm. Well, the food is horrible. They're operated by companies, and the companies have to report to shareholders. They want to make a profit. So you know, rather than feeding a prisoner a decent meal, you know, they'll buy the cheapest, cruddiest macaroni and cheese somewhere. You know, it's amazing, but I have clients from other countries where they eat healthy food, they eat food relatively organic, and they go into these detention centers and they can't even eat. And so they're starving. And that's one reason why these centers are worse. And President Trump, the day he took office, signed an executive order reinstating the private prisons.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I have had immigration officers literally tell me, you know what, I'm going to be detaining this person and my buddies over at the USA Prison Corporation are going to be happy because they get to make more money, you know, whatever, whatever. And it's just so sad because these are regular people. These are non-criminals that the only thing they're doing is fleeing a bad situation, right? I mean, you can argue over whether or not they should be granted asylum, but should we be jailing these people pending their claim? I mean, are we really concerned? I mean, there's technology available today. There's ankle bracelets and really good technology. If you're worried about these people and whether they're going to attend their hearings and so forth, you can track them. You know, it's a small price to pay for not having these horrible. And I can tell you even more stories about them, prison. So that I imagine, and I'm hoping and praying that soon to be President Biden will change this back to what it was when President Obama left. And so so that's one of the effects of Trump, you know, being in office, where, you know, unfortunately, these private detention centers have persisted, and they're awful. They pay the employees minimum wage. Again, these are, you know, they're not the brightest and greatest people that are working there. They don't have an understanding of prisoners' rights like people that work in prisons do.
That's right. Absolutely. Some of the stories you mentioned, well, I guess I'm going to jump into it and just ask you.
Yeah,
what happens to these kids, Robert? What happens to these kids that are separated? Have they been sold into sex trafficking? I mean, what is happening to these children?
Yeah, usually, you know, they get released. There are different agencies that some of them. Sometimes they will be taken care of by a relative or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and these kids, we've had situations where 2-year-olds have had to show up for deportation hearings.
Yes.
I mean, what is the point of all this? You know, our immigration courts are backlogged, you know, and the judge is asking an infant, you know, why they are afraid to go back and everything. And it's put a lot of pressure on the judges.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I saw a video about 2 years ago when this whole thing was going down. I saw a video of a judge and he's sitting there and he's looking at the infant and he's like, even the judge is like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Even the judge is like, I'm being put in this position where even you can just see it on the judge's face. Like, he was like, how is this human? Like, why am I being put in this position where I have to talk to an infant to ask why things are not better back at home? Like, what is this? It's a mockery of our democracy, really.
Well, that's what we've seen throughout the Trump administration. And now with you know, trying to get him out. And, you know, I'm praying somehow that he and Pence resign and maybe Nancy Pelosi can be a caregiver for a couple of months until I don't think it's going to happen, but I wish it would.
Yeah.
Honestly, these are horribly inhumane. I mean, here we are, a country that's supposed to be an example to other countries of human rights. And this is a blatant human rights violation to put these kids in cages and detain them. I mean, a lot of them are released, just so you know, they are, if they can find situations for them, if they can find other relatives and people, they are. but to put them in such horrible conditions to begin with, to put their parents in such horrible conditions to begin with, is I just don't understand.
You know, Robert, I saw a video of a woman having her 6-month-old baby being snatched away from her arms. And I just broke down. I was just like, oh my God. Like, how do you go to sleep after that? Like, who, the officer who's doing this, the person giving the order, like, how do you just go to sleep at night knowing you just took away somebody's child? Like, that child, that baby, I mean, are there instances where babies just died? They died because they were away from their parents.
There are instances where, I don't know about that piece of it. You may be right. I'm not aware of it. What I am aware of, people dying in custody and kids due to lack of medical care and everything else. That has happened. And I totally agree with you. How do you do that? It's because people are encouraged to dehumanize other people. Really, we're not encouraged to really look at how people are the same. Mm-hmm. It's my humble opinion, like it or not. I remember when George W. Bush was president and how horrible that felt, all the corruption. I didn't think it could get any worse, and it did, of course. Yep. And I remember being so despondent. 2 wars, economy starting to collapse because they let banks and everything do whatever they want. And then, you know, President Clinton made a wonderful speech, former President Clinton at the time, about how we are 99.9 genetically the same, all human beings. So putting that in the immigration context, you have people immigrating from south to north. They're not coming here to put their kids in Harvard. They're coming here because they're starving. Their kids are being conscripted into gangs or killed if they don't join. The young ladies are being made prostitutes or threatened with death or actually put to death. I have had people in my office, and you know, Shane has worked on some of these cases, and it's sad. So the only way you can do that, what you said, take a basis, it's them. They're going to behave now, and they're not going to come here. But where the disconnect is they are going to come here, because taking your baby away is horrible, but death is even worse. And so, and starvation. So people make sacrifices all the time, and people come here knowing they're going to be separated from a husband or a wife or a child until they legalize their status, because the conditions are horrible. So the real issue for us is, what's the proper response to people from south to north? What is the right thing to do? That's to me what it boils down to. You can argue about immigration, is it beneficial or not? To me, it doesn't matter. It's about doing the right thing.
Yes, I agree. You know, Trump, remember when Trump came out and he was just like, these people coming from shithole countries. You remember that comment that he made?
And I
was
just, absolutely do.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, interesting. Now that his ass is going to be dragged out by the Secret Service, and you know, he can go back to the shithole Trump Tower, because God knows nobody else wants to stay in that goddamn shithole. You know, and have his Russian prostitutes have him hold the showers that he desires so much. Because it's absolutely repulsive and disgusting what this man has done. And then, you know, and talk about insult to injury, is that his mail order bride, Melania Trump, wore a jacket. It says, I really don't care, do you? Remember those kids where, and it's just like, you are just as awful as he is. A lot of times, you know, people would be like, don't make fun of Melania. And it's just like, oh, no. You're also a dumpster fire, just the way he is. You are no better than he is.
Unbelievable. It's like,
just a lack of empathy and compassion. So, Robert, let me ask you this. So these children that have been released, a lot of these parents that have gone back, what is the actual law. So you show up to the border and you say, hey, I am seeking asylum. I am escaping poverty. I'm escaping violence. I need refuge for myself, for my children. What happens then?
Well, so I don't know how much you want to get into nuance and policy changes. So I'm going to get into it a little bit. Let's say you did that under President Obama. You would be brought into the United States, detained, and basically your case would be heard within the United States. You'd be detained for about 6 months while they figured it out, made sure you were safe, everything else. And then you have the opportunity to bond out and pursue your asylum case in front of a judge. Interesting thing enough is under Trump, they are now making these people wait in Mexico. And a lot of the border towns are filled with people. And a lot of these border towns are dangerous. People get robbed. People get killed. Asylum seekers who are vulnerable people. And the thing is, people don't want to relate to others so much. I mean, the asylum laws, I'm an American Jew. The asylum laws were created as a result of the Holocaust. And were created so that people that are fleeing, you know, these dangerous situations are given some kind of protection. Mm-hmm. And other than that, we have situations of the Holocaust and everything else. And, you know, and so anyway, in terms of process, getting back to process and procedure under Trump, what's happening now is that they get an asylum hearing in front of a judge. They're brought into the United States for the day. They have their hearing, they're kicked back out to Mexico, and then they wait for a decision on their case. And it's caused a ton of problems for this very vulnerable, population. And, you know, it just saddens me because people can't relate. You know, you mentioned Melania Trump, people from Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing is, all those people claim asylum. Beginning part of my career, I represented Romanians, Bulgarians, Eastern Europeans, and we thought, hey, this isn't going to change and this and that. We were welcoming, we were kind, we gave those people asylum. And why are we not doing that with these people? Because they're a different color? Come on. You know, honestly. Right. It's the same thing.
There was a different period. It was a different time. Like what years are you talking about in your like 90s? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. We gave asylum to people from Russia, from Romania, from Bulgaria, from Poland, you know, all those countries. And now we don't. Things have changed. And, you know, in terms of our policy, in terms of how we treat people, yes. Eventually, these violent spots are going to change eventually. So the question again is, how do we treat people in this time? You know, and it's kind of ironic because I think of the movie Ice Age with Dennis Quaid. I don't know if you've ever seen it. At the end of the movie, there's this big icebergs that, you know, global warming is accelerated and the United States becomes basically a wasteland. Most of it, except a few parts of Texas and all the in the end of the movie, the president dies. The vice president is sitting in Mexico. Mexico didn't want to let the Americans in. All the Americans had to immigrate back to Mexico. And, and so the way you treat people counts in this world. To me, it's the only thing that really counts. You can't take your wealth with you. You can't take those things with you. But you can treat people well, and especially people that have been through something claiming asylum. So the way it works now is, you know, people do get a hearing in front of a judge. They can present evidence and everything else. But Trump has truncated the procedure. That's one of the first things that President Joe is going to change. Yes. On day one with an executive order. It's not consistent with our obligation post-Holocaust, post-World War II, to protect people from harm. And the obligation of all of the different countries that were so appalled by what had happened. People forget so soon.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, even, you know, what fascinated me, Robert, with the Trump presidency is that we had immigrants, right? We had Latinos for Trump. We had Muslims for Trump. We have South Asians for Trump. We have Middle Easterns for Trump. And it's just like, did you forget the Muslim ban? Did you forget these things? Also, now that you're here and you have immigration, so you don't give a shit about the rest of the people coming in? So it's a very interesting thing that I don't know how white people forget their pain. Like, I don't know what happens to their compassion and their empathy. It's like, did you forget what happened to you? Like, did you forget your struggles? Like, people are trying to come in and try to make a better life. I actually wanted to ask you, I know that there was a lot of talk when Obama was president that record number of people were deported under his administration. And that the cages that Trump kept saying that whose administration built it, it was Obama's administration that they were built. Can you give a little commentary on that? Why was Obama so kind of gung-ho about deporting people?
So a couple questions in there. So let me break a couple of them down. Good questions. So in terms of policy, Obama was really trying to pass immigration reform. Actually, George W. Bush tried very hard to pass immigration reform. Obama tried, and it even passed the Senate in 2017. If you look at my website, immigrationprofessor.com, for those of you, I'll give a plug for myself. I have a video about the legislation, and about 13 Republicans in the Senate at that time, 2013, I think, signed on to the legislation. And in any event, so the reason Obama moving to why he deported so many people is he really was trying to show, hey, you can trust me to enforce the immigration laws. And I'm not going to look the other way. If people are here illegally, we're going to put them in proceedings and all that kind of stuff. And he was trying to get immigration reform passed. And unfortunately, it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is that the House of Representatives at that time, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, said, we're not even going to put this on the floor. We're not even going to put it to a vote. And it would have passed. The thing is, all Democrats and many Republicans would have passed that bill. It had reforms for employment-based immigration, investment-based, legal immigration, all that kind of stuff. And so that's why he did that. The good news is that at the end of Obama's presidency, 2014, 15, 16, he allowed something called prosecutorial discretion, where people that had been put in proceedings, deportation proceedings, that had been here, you know, for a few years and developed ties, didn't have any serious crimes, could get the government to drop the proceedings. It was called PD, or prosecutorial discretion. So one of the things we're hoping from Joe is that he brings back prosecutorial discretion for people in proceedings. And, you know, so the government's priority, rather than deporting someone who's just here illegally because they're undocumented, right, would be criminals and people that really would pose a serious risk to the United States and to the people that are here.
Right. So if you're an undocumented person and you're here, you haven't committed any crime, and then you're trying to do the right thing, you're like, look, I want to be legal. I want to be a citizen. I want to pay my taxes. So what happens to them? I mean, do they just kind of get thrown also in a private prison? Like, what happens to them?
They could be. And many of them are deported. You know, it's very hard to immigrate to the United States. That's over right. 90% of the people can't. They don't have a basis. They don't have a ground to do it. And it's just very hard. The system of our immigration laws does not look at the whole person. Countries like Canada, countries like Australia, they look at different things that someone could bring to the table. How young are they? Ability to work? How many relatives do they have here? How many friends do they have here? You get points for everything, and you either get in or you don't. Here, you have to be sponsored by a very close family member, a husband, wife, son or daughter or parent, really, to get status. Or you have to have a lot of money to invest to get status. Or an employer has to go through a whole process of advertising, showing they can't find anybody. They're not going to do that for somebody in El Salvador or wherever. It's very difficult. There's ways to do things, but they're really complicated. And they make no sense.
No, I was going to say, why are Canadians so nice when it comes to immigration?
I think Canadians are nice generally. They're some of the nicest people in the world. I mean, I was thinking to myself, you know, if this Trump thing continues, I might marry one of my Canadian clients or something. I'm but, like, there you go. But anyway, no, it's just a much more enlightened country. I mean, they have a good healthcare system. That's a public healthcare system. You know, it's just a much more enlightened country in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think.
Is it also, Robert, would you say, sorry to interrupt you, would you also say, is it because they're also a lot less populated? They're a lot smaller country than we are?
That, I think, makes a difference. But I have a thought about that, if I could share it.
Yes, please.
Well, here's the thought. The thought is to be mindful. And what do I mean by that? You have all these people coming from south to north, from different countries, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, violent countries, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And they're claiming asylum. Some of them get asylum. A lot of them don't. But they're entitled to protection until we figure out what's going on. Well, to me, you have a city, for example, like LA, where I live, very populated, a lot of people here, overcrowded. If people are going to come and claim asylum, why not do what Canada did at one time and say, you know, Mr. Asylum Seeker from El Salvador, would you be willing to be a hotel cleaner person in Oklahoma for the next 5 years and settle there? We'll give you $5,000 to settle in the suburbs of Oklahoma because they need people to do these kind of jobs. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to get a job there and you're able to work for 5 years, we'll give you a work permit and eventually a green card. Why not direct the immigration there or towns? You know, President Trump won Ohio. Those communities are dying. You know, you have people my age that are skilled workers and the communities are dying. They need young people that are going to support them in their retirement, young people that are going to work and some of those jobs. So in rural mm-hmm. Ohio at a hotel or a restaurant or whatever. So you could be mindful about these policies. Mm-hmm. You know, why are we putting people in prison and paying our taxes to these private companies? That's right. We could say, hey, you know, go to Youngstown, Ohio. We found this hotel job. We're going to give you $5,000 rather than paying $300,000 to the prison to house and feed you for years. And if you're able to work and everything, you can even withdraw your asylum if you don't win and maybe get a green card like that because we have the baby boomers who are retiring and we need that kind of support.
Yep.
But we don't need it in LA. We will give you $10,000 if you go to wherever and direct it more, direct it by location and jobs and things like that. If you had a more dynamic system,
which we
don't have at all.
You know, it reminds me of Germany. You know, Germany is very, very methodical and they're very strategic in the way they approach things. And what they did is when I visited Germany I saw a big Turkish population. And, you know, and the reason they had a Turkish population is because their older generation was dying. A lot of people were not having children. So they're like, who's going to carry the burden? Who's going to be carrying the burden? And it's the immigrants. It's the Turkish descendants who came in as workers. And, you know, and German government said, we'll make you citizen and your children will be part of our workforce. And that's exactly what has been carrying Germany. And now when the whole Syria thing went down, they immigrated. I mean, so Germany took the second highest number of Syrian refugees after Turkey. So there's, that's another thing that they did. And, you know, I personally witnessed and saw those refugees, the Syrian refugees, and they were incredibly organized what they did. They took like these abandoned buildings, abandoned banks, turned them into apartments, took care of them, you know, gave them education, gave them money, gave them housing, taught them, like gave them free classes to learn German, help them find a job. I mean, these are a lot of the Syrians that were escaping and, you know, Syria were highly skilled doctors, surgeons, you know, and they were like, we'll just come in, we'll teach you German and come and be part of our workforce. So why is it so difficult to do this in America? I mean, how much bureaucracy and red tape is in our political system that people don't want this kind of policies implemented? Like what?
I think people do. I think, you know, obviously, you know, the gridlock that we have and deadlock in our policy. We have no major immigration legislation since 1996, 24 years.
Wow.
And that was horrible legislation. President Clinton said, you know, I'm going to hold my nose and sign this because there's some good things, but it's really horrible, bad things. And, you know, and then before that, 1986. So no major changes because, you know, you can't get people to agree on things. And and it's really sad. But I also think there's an educational and cultural disconnect. How else could you get a president like Trump?
That's right.
How could people not understand the basic principles of that we share as Americans?
That's right.
You know, personally, I've been very politically active, you know, both in college. I was president of Young Democrats. And even after that, big political person. And I used to debate Republicans all the time when I was younger. And every Republican that I debated voted for Joe Biden this time.
That's right.
And many of them, they didn't like Hillary Clinton. Unfortunately, she was so demonized. Nothing not to like, in my view.
Yep.
But she was very demonized by the Republicans. But in any event, they didn't vote at all. But I think the common thread is that they understood this guy, it's not a Democratic or Republican thing. It's beyond the pale.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand how our country, which fought the Nazis and fought authoritarian rule and fought those, you know, Joseph Goebbels and the Nazi regime propaganda, you know, the Russians propaganda. I have a lot of friends from Eastern Europe and clients, many of whom I've helped. And I don't understand how they don't recognize. Some do, some don't. But the ones that don't, I don't get it, how they don't recognize these kind of things to alter truth and reality that we live in. You know, that is scary. And I'm very, very sad and disturbed that 70 million people don't get it. It's a real need for education in our country.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of things. But anyway, I'm on my soapbox.
No. I actually wanted to say, do you think it has to do with education? Maybe partially, but I think it also has to do with empathy, and it has to do with compassion, and I don't know if there's a schooling for that, quite frankly.
Well, I really think it's interesting. You know, there's people, I'll connect this in a minute, but I'm sure you've seen television shows about people that used to be in the KKK and these white supremacy groups that left and they now go and try to convert other people that are joining them.
Sure.
And one of the things that's missing is, yeah, I hate black people or I hate Latino, whatever it is. But how many do you know? How many of you sat down with, you know, and had a beer with and talked with and tried to find out why did they come to this country?
That's right.
The perspective changes when there's real understanding and not fear. It's based on fear.
That's right. 100%.
Why, when did our country get so afraid? We are the country that beat the Nazis. We had help, we had a lot of help, but you know, we've been a brave country in the past, and I really appreciate Joe Biden's statement, we are fighting for the soul of America.
That's right. Robert, this election was not even about Biden and Trump. It was about fascism and democracy. I mean, it was like, listen, which one are you voting for? Are you voting for democracy or are you voting for fascism? Petra Miku is here. And she said, first of all, she was singing your praises. Petra said, hello to both of you. I have known Robert for a long time. He is brilliant, which I absolutely concur. And then Petra said, Robert, do you think immigration reform would be possible with a Republican Senate majority? What do you think?
My initial thought is no. I wish it would be. I really am. One of the things that makes me so heartbroken is Mitch McConnell and other Republicans. And how could they support this person? And will they continue to? Because, you know, he controls the minds and I was almost going to say hearts, but I don't think these people have hearts.
And
voting levers of 70 million people. Yep. And, you know, I don't get it. You know, I know Republicans that are moral, you know, Mitt Romney kind of person. I disagree with the guy on policy. I feel he sides too much, but he has a heart and a soul and class.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And he knows what's right and he knows what's wrong.
Agreed.
You know, in a general sense, in the sense of shared American values. And, agreed. But these other people, they're in it for the money. They're in it for themselves.
Yes.
And it's shameless. I honestly thought I think I was speaking before about these wars under Bush and how Cheney, who was on the board of Halliburton, they awarded Halliburton, billions of dollars to rebuild Iraq after we destroyed it. You know, come on.
That's correct.
And this administration being so corrupt, it's heartbreaking. These people are just in it for themselves.
Yep.
There needs to be serious change. I really pray that these two Senate races go well, and we'll have Kamala Harris in charge of the Senate.
Yes, Kamala Harris.
Our senator.
Kamala's out there doing her thing. You know, Robert, I feel like, do you feel that it's not just the Republicans that have kind of dropped the ball on this, but also the Democrats?
Yep, I agree. I agree. I think that there needs to be systemic change. Mm-hmm. I think that money needs to be out of politics. We need to amend the Constitution. Corporations are not people.
That's
they
right.
do not have a right to influence policy.
That's correct.
To the extent they do.
Yes.
It just, you know, how can you say to me, you know, I have to run for the House of Representatives every 2 years and these companies keep supporting me so I get an office. I'm a Democrat or Republican. You know, yeah. I'm getting money from Big Pharma. Some Democrats get money from Big Pharma. And how can you say that that's not going to influence those people? It has to.
That's right.
Has to. This is interesting because I know some real good Republicans that I can disagree on everything except campaign finance reform. Some of them, some Republicans do see the need. And, you know, our system needs to change.
Yes.
You just can't have that anymore. And you can't have situations. I don't get it. You know, this whole thing that happened under Obama where immigration reform could have passed, a majority in the House, you know, ready to pass it. But because of the partisan divide, the Boehner said, we're not going to bring it to the floor. And that's wrong. You know, it's wrong. The majority of representatives, majority of people want this, desired it. And there are pieces of that legislation that I thought were bad, you know, but unfortunately in our day and age, people don't want to compromise. People right. don't want to work with other people, and it's bad.
Do you think, Robert, it's about that they don't want to work with each other, or is it the fact that they think in terms of votes? They're like, look, every 2 years, I got to get reelected. Yeah. My district or the people that voted for me, they don't want immigrants coming in, or they don't want they don't want to see, you know, X, Y, and Z kind of people coming into the country. Or if I'm the one who introduces a bill that has, you know, that offers any kind of reformation, then, you know, I'm going to be looked at as a bad guy, and then I'm going to lose votes, and then I may not get reelected. My party might get pissed off at me. So there's like all there's this constant like, it feels like a rat race. Where they're just like, it's like a rat race where they're like, all right, well, I see what the problem is. I do want reformation, but it's going to cost me my seat if I do.
You got to have political courage. There just isn't enough of it. And there should be not only money out of politics. I mean, this is, I'm on my soapbox again, right?
No, that's a great soapbox,
I
mean,
Robert. You know, this is another interesting issue because I see some Republicans, and I used to be against term limits, but now I'm for them. I think it needs to be citizens who want to do public duty. Be in the House of Representatives for 20 years. My old view was, well, it's really good. We want that person. We want their experience. We don't want a constant whatever. And term limits may be a good idea. Here's a couple of others if you want them. Yeah. And people should talk about these things. Why is election season almost 2 years for president? And why do people have to spend and raise $1 billion probably for each candidate this cycle, I'm sure. How much money went into that? How many schools could be built? I think it's England. I could be wrong. I know there's at least one other industrialized country where basically the election, the campaigns are financed by taxes, by the public. Mm. You have $3 million, Obama. You have $3 million, Romney. Mm. No campaigning till 3 months before the election. And that's it. Everybody has equal money. Everybody has equal time. What do you get? Ideas, policy, and look, and honestly, it's so needed now. Look at how it's devolved under Trump into the worst possible thing, name calling, sure, and this, sure. that, and the other. It's bread and circuses. It's scary, Mona.
Yep.
I found myself, I mean, I like to joke around just like you, but really seriously thinking about leaving the United States. Would I have to leave? And, you know, honestly,
Robert, the feeling was, well, this part that you just said about leaving the country, I've talked about it so many times on my live stream where I was just like, so I immigrated from Pakistan when I was 15. And the reason our family immigrated from Pakistan is because I have four older brothers, and my second and my third brother were given expired vaccination for polio, and they got polio because of it. It was expired vaccination that this doctor was giving out. He knew it was expired. And my two brothers got sick. There was no treatment for them. My mom would walk around with a 8-month-old that had polio. He hadn't even learned how to walk yet. He had polio. My other brother was 2 years old. And just to carry these two sick kids, right, looking to find treatment for them. And with the grace of God, the Shriners Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky, responded to a letter because my mom didn't go to college. She wasn't fluent in English. She couldn't write English. So it was my uncles who helped her, who went to school and were, you know, did speak English. And they would help write letters to Shriners Hospital and said, hey, I have two sick children. There's no treatment. There's no future for these kids. You know, like, we would have relatives and we would have like people telling my mom, you know, throw those children away. They're useless. You can't do anything with these kids. Like, why don't you give them up for adoption? And my mom would be like, with all due respect, go fuck yourself. I'm not going to do that. These are my children. Like, I'm going to find a solution to give them a better life. And that's how my family came to the U.S., right? And so I look at that and I'm just like, man, you know, you talk about like the scary. I was just like, I've been here 20 some odd years of my life. Majority of my life I've been here. I don't have the physical courage anymore, the mental and emotional strength to pick myself and uproot myself again and move to another country. I'm like, how am I going? I mean, I was seriously contemplating leaving Germany because I'm just like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, Canada's not taking us. Canada's like, you filthy Americans with your COVID. Don't come in here with your gross COVID. That's another issue. Speaking of legislation, and this is like going a little bit off topic, but what are your feelings about, you know, when senators and congressmen people retire, they retire on full salary, full benefits. Isn't that bullshit, Robert?
Well, why shouldn't they retire? I'm a little confused.
No, they should retire, but don't they get full salaries? They get full benefits? Like, they no longer serve the Senate. They no longer serve the Congress.
Oh, they get 100% of their salary?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they give themselves the best of everything, and yet they're unwilling to do a $15 minimum wage or anything for people. It's just sad. There needs to be serious reform to the system. I mean, again, the answer to your question, just to make sure I answered, is I don't know, Petra. I don't know whether there's going to be reform. I just don't trust McConnell. I think the only way immigration reform gets passed is if the two senators in Georgia are Democratic and Kamala Harris casts the deciding vote. I just think it's gotten that partisan. Now, I don't know. I mean, Joe Biden ran in part on a platform that he could reach out and maybe foment some compromise. I wish he would. I mean, I honestly think, you know, it's really tough because I'm divided in parts. People are watching this podcast. I my friends are this and that. But here's the parts. There's a part of me that says, you know what, Republicans, I don't think you're going to compromise. Screw you. We're going to make D.C. a state. We're going to pack the Supreme Court and just do the right thing for people. There's another part of me that says, you know what, you're 70 million people, you're Americans, you're part of our country, and so we need to take your opinion into account.
Yes.
And it's tough. And it's tough because I don't feel they have given us that respect.
That's correct.
And I feel they have been obstructionist and non-compromising since the time of Clinton, since Clinton and Gingrich and all that kind of stuff. And I feel it's their fault. Now, I could be wrong. I'm obviously looking at this through my own glasses, which are progressive Democrat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but anyway, it's tough because there are issues like immigration reform where there can be a consensus of majority Democrats and a minority of Republicans that could theoretically pass something. Sure. It's just, you know, the leadership is so like, screw you, we're going to control our people. Well, you're a senator. You're supposed to do what's right for you. Why do you have to listen to McConnell? It's like almost dictatorial. Why are you sycophantic to Trump?
Right.
You know, this is not the way America is supposed to work.
Yeah, I agree with you. Petra says, I agree, sadly, we are losing highly skilled workers to other countries. And to that, I tell you, Petra, my ex is a Jewish, Polish, German scientist whom I met who was working at UCLA. He used to work, you know how much they used to pay him? He's a scientist. They used to pay him $40,000 a year at UCLA. So then the German government stepped in and they were like, hey, you're one of our top brains. We love all the work and the research you've done. Why don't you come back? We'll give you your own lab and we'll give you a 3 million euro grant and you can do whatever you want with that. Come back. So we lost him. And he went back. I don't blame him. I don't blame him for 1 second. I mean, he's wonderful. And he's brilliant. He's brilliant at what he does, you know? And so talking about losing skilled workers, yeah, 100% we're going to lose skilled workers. I mean, my father, when I was a kid in Pakistan, my father used to say, you know why she's so successful referring to America? And I was like, why? He goes, because she's so smart. She goes and buys brains from around the world and brings her and makes them feel at home. That's what makes America great. And I remember my father telling me that when I was a little kid. You know, he's
yeah.
So-
Yeah, I mean, that's what wins us Nobel Prizes. How many times has it been an immigrant person who became a citizen who won the Nobel Prize and whatever for the United States? A lot.
Yep.
And, you know, but I want to emphasize too that, you know, skilled and highly skilled, there's a need at many levels. And so, and yes, at the very top and brilliant people, but also at the very bottom, you know, mm-hmm. I have clients, Latino clients who work two jobs in a factory and they work overnight. I don't know how their system takes, you know, these weird shifts, but they do it, you know, and they work their hearts out.
Yes.
And we need people like that too, to help our small businesses and mid-sized businesses.
100%. I 100% agree with you. Robert, do you feel that there's going to be much change, you think, with the Biden administration when it comes to immigration reform? Like, first of all, you think he's going to shut those cages down? Those cages need to go.
Cages are gone. I pray private detention centers go.
Yeah.
I 100% they will change the asylum procedure so that you don't have these people waiting in Mexico and getting robbed and raped and killed on the border towns. And so I think a lot of there are a lot of things that Joe Biden can and will change. He's already made statements that he is going to do those things. And obviously the separation policy will change.
Robert, this separation policy, has it always been there and then Trump just exercised it? Or he's the one who signed the executive order?
No, it was promulgated by Jeff Sessions. And what's his name? Stephen Miller. And we never had this like under Obama. What Obama did was made a political ploy, and he said, okay, I want to pass immigration reform, so I kind of have to show the Republicans, I need some Republicans, so I have to show them I'm serious about enforcing the laws. So he did that. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't this horribly inhumane, you know, take the kids out of the, I mean, gosh, no, nothing like that.
You know,
I'm at a loss of words for the country that I love. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s and, you know, the whole concepts of greater equality in the society and greater respect for, you know, all people, no matter where they were from, were really, and the environment, very focused and very much emphasized in my youth. And it's very sad what's happened. It's going to take a lot to fix it. I'm just going to say President Biden. I like the term to say it. President Biden has a lot on his plate.
Yeah, he does. And a lot of work. It seems to be a Republican pattern where the Democrats hand them over a perfectly fine country, and then they put the whole thing up. It's a pattern, right? They fucked it up, and then they send it back, and they're just like, oh no, I don't know how this happened. And it's just like, you idiot, it was working, and then you became selfish and you implemented your screwed up policies and you brought in your childish shit, and now we have a mess on our hands. And it just seems like they just mess things up and then just hand it back to the Democrats and be like, here you go.
Yeah.
Here's the crap, you deal with it.
Well, here's the interesting change. And this is, I'll point this out. I don't know if a lot of people, I agree with you 100%. But it's become a little nuanced in a sense, because it used to be that the Republicans were horrible on domestic policy, a little better on foreign policy in certain ways. In any event, a little better, you know, I mean, not that I agree 100%, but, you know, you get Reagan, who screwed up domestically, you know, he releases all these people from institutions and everything, go homeless, mental health patients, everything else,
right. Cuts
everything, you know, but people like what he did with the Soviets. And I got to say, in retrospect, it may very well have been the right, it probably is the right thing, right? We got rid of the Soviet Union. Although the military buildup began under Carter, who was one of the more conservative Democrats, actually. But anyway, then...
Also a one-term president.
But in any event, you know, and then the next Republican president was Bush Sr., who also had really good foreign policy, actually. He supervised the whole post-Cold War thing in a very, very deft manner. He handled the Gulf War in an amazing manner, got in and got out. Think about that in terms of what we just did. Got in, got out. Horrible domestically. Economy was terrible. Clinton gets elected. It's interesting now. Trump, horrible on domestic policy, like beyond belief, close to Nazism, right, with separation policy, beyond belief. And with foreign policy, horrible, with a couple of shining things, at least in my opinion, small shiny things, but doing them in such a way that was just almost defeating the purpose. Yeah. Like, I always thought the U.S. should contribute a bit less to NATO in the sense that our allies should give a little bit more. But to insult our allies,
that's right,
to horribly put them down, this, that, and the other, it could have been handled better.
Yep.
It definitely could have been handled better because these are our allies. These are our people that share our values, you know, and then to cozy up, you know, so
to dictators and, oh, they're my friends. Kim Jong-un, Putin. Oh, they're my friends. Bolsonaro. They're my friends.
Yeah. So you have some attempt to be, to achieve some goals with foreign policy and trade that that may be achievable or laudable, but completely botching it up and creating some worse problems. I mean, just incredible. You know, it just, you know, I've said this a lot. It never ceases to amaze me that, you know, 2012, United States could elect an extremely intelligent, compassionate, a man who's sincerely religious, Barack Obama. I've actually been to his church in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, in one sense, family guy, you know, wonderful seemingly relationship with wife. And then 4 years later, elect somebody like Trump. I mean, how could that, I say, how could that happen?
A dude with three baby mamas who drools over his own daughter. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, the list just goes on. It's just horrible, horrible comb over. I mean, a man who is in desperate need of gay friends because God knows gay friends will never let you go out looking like that. Just never.
Nope.
Just horrible. just all around. Do you think, Robert, that you were actually going to talk about some of the cases, you know, during the Trump administration? Have you had clients that have been deported and their cases were just like, yeah, we're not interested. Okay, goodbye, leave.
You know what Trump has done is to put, you know, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of a good way to answer your question. I mean, yeah, people have been deported under Trump. People have been deported under Obama.
Sure.
What's happening is that the process, presidents can't change legislation unilaterally. What they can change is policy and procedure. So what Trump has done is, you know, to make immigration judges, you know, spend less time on cases, not pick up things so people that shouldn't get deported get deported. Put a ton of pressure on them, and they're already backlogged, you know, to try to do things, and that's resulted in more deportations of people that should be here. People getting deported that said they should get asylum because they'd be killed, and they actually get killed.
That's
more
right.
of that. going on. Yeah, because there's no respect for people and process and procedure. And, you know, people, it's very hard for them to talk about these things that may happen in their country. Very difficult.
Sure.
I mean, I think the analogy that you put up, or visual you put up of the, you know, 2-year-old baby and the immigration judge shrugging their arms, you got a ton of that kind of thing going on. Some immigration judges have pushed back, by the way. I've had a few in L.A. especially that are, you know, I don't care what you say. I'm reopening this case and I'm giving this person a green card. I've had some of that. It's been
really
interesting.
Judges have been like, all right, I don't care what you say. I'm reopening the case.
Yeah.
Wow.
They just do it. What happens is that Trump controls ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and their lawyers. Their lawyers act as the prosecutors in deportation proceedings. So Trump sets up their policies, Trump sessions all them. And, you know, now Barr, of course. But they keep changing things. They're changing the cases and the way they interpret the law. Battered women who aren't protected in their countries. They had shots at asylum before. They've tried to restrict that now. They've come out with Attorney General has certified cases to himself and tried to restrict that. Gangs, people claiming asylum from gangs that are protected by the political structure, they're trying to cut off asylum for those people. It's already hard to get asylum for those people, even under Obama, and mm-hmm. Trump's made it even way, way harder. So that's what happens. More people are getting deported. It is happening faster sometimes, you know. But now it's real interesting. System's completely clogged up and everything else because of COVID. And
sure.
Again, President Biden, sounds good to say that, has an awful mess to awful lot of mess to clean up. And I pray for him. So,
sure. Yeah. Robert, have you had do you have kind of cases or cases you've dealt with or are dealing with or have had that are they primarily are majority from certain parts of the world or they're just kind of a mixed bag? Like
I have a mixed bag. I like to tell people because people have, oh, you're an immigration lawyer. You deal with a lot of legal people crossing the border. Well, that's part of it for sure. But I deal with multi-million-dollar investors. I deal with human resources people and companies bringing people over on work visas. Mm-hmm. It's a great practice. I love it. Petra actually is one of the people I taught immigration law. I have a lot of attorneys who I've mentored through it. Okay. But it's great. It keeps you going because you get people from different cultures, different countries. I would say the plurality of my clients, maybe 30, I have a lot from El Salvador. Plurality is Latino. I have probably 40-50%, maybe higher Latino yeah. from different countries. El Salvador, I think, is the biggest one. But, you know, I get people from England, Australia. I got my first client from East Timor.
East Timor, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like,
You've gone global, Robert. You've gone global.
I've gone global. I'm psyched, you know. But yeah, it's cool. You really get to know different cultures and countries, and yeah. You know, I feel blessed to do what I do. It's like really, I'm doing this and making money at it. I'll take it.
Yeah. Robert, would you say that when you chose immigration as a young man and wanted to go to law school, did that have something to do with being a child or a grandchild of, you know, immigrants? Did that kind of have an influence on you?
Nope. Immigration chose me. I didn't choose it. I went into law school wanting to be a politician. And, got out, didn't know where to go. By the time I got out, I was thinking to do employment law. There was no immigration law. This was 1989. I mean, you know, they didn't teach it then. And
immigration law in 1989?
I think there was in the country, there may have been one class at Washington University.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just really didn't, it wasn't an area of law, really. People didn't really consider it so much. I mean, there are immigration lawyers, there are definitely cases going, but they didn't teach it. And not much, not at law, other law, not at law schools and everything.
So, so when people were coming in, I guess before, they were just directly just dealing with the government?
No, there were lawyers. There have been lawyers for years and years that have practiced in the area. What I'm saying is they didn't teach it in law schools. You know, and there were very few when I started. There's been a lot more, you know, ever since that time. But and classes have been added. And, you know, myself, I was they didn't have a class at University of Illinois Law School. So I was invited to go teach and I did. And But it shows me, I started with a large, the largest firm in the United States, Denton's, it used to be Sonnenschein, Nath and Rosenthal, doing commercial litigation. And I liked it, but I didn't love it. And my one of my colleagues, who's Latina attorney, she was doing Denton's. I give a plug out to them. They're an amazing firm. I think they have like 1,500 lawyers worldwide, and they can afford to do a lot of pro bono work, and they encourage lawyers to do it. And so my colleague, Jennifer Bolero, she picked asylum law. And I said, that sounds really cool. And so I started to get clients from Nicaragua, El Salvador, and I just loved it. I mean, I would stay up late with the clients, get to know them. I'm a people person, you know.
Yeah. And I can tell. I can tell.
Yeah, of course you can. You are too. And so to me, it wasn't work anymore. And and then, you know, years later, I did some volunteering for Jewish Vocational Services. We had an influx of people from Eastern Europe. Met a lady from Romania, got her asylum, changed my life, and I learned employment-based immigration. A lot of Eastern Europeans built Chicago, man. Rehab Chicago, it's amazing, hardworking folk. And a lot of their employers wanted to sponsor. They would claim asylum. When they couldn't get asylum, we had their employers said, hey, this guy's or this lady is working, you know, 16-hour days, are the hardest working people around. Can I help them? And so I was blessed to learn employment-based immigration. And it's a great practice.
And Robert, what's your ancestry? You said your Jewish. Is your ancestry from Ukraine, from Eastern Europe? What's your
Yeah, if you ever see Fiddler on the Roof, that's where my grandparents and great-grandparents came.
I'm a New Yorker who lives in LA. New York, Fiddler on the Roof. I'm Jewish by association. So there's
yes, that. You are.
I'm Jewish by association.
Hava Nagila, baby.
All day Hava Nagila. I like my brisket. I like, I go to Greenblatt's. The whole bit. I'm getting my matzo ball. I'm doing my thing.
So, All right. Well, come down. We'll jog at Playa del Rey. They have my favorite bagels and lox down at Tanner's Coffee.
Okay.
And have a nice coffee and talk politics.
Yeah.
And it's my grandfather. Unfortunately, this is in the car right now, but I have his naturalization certificate. He came from Ukraine. He came when he was just, I don't know, a couple years old. That's on my mom's side. And so all Eastern Europeans, some parts, my great grandfather, a very famous cantor, Jewish cantor. Here, I'll show you this. This is cool. Hang on.
Yeah, let's see it.
There you go. We'll give you the visual.
Look. Well, you're going to like this, Robert. Look who joined us. Shane joined us.
Oh my God! Okay,
Shane is watching. Oh, look at that!
Great grandfather.
Oh my goodness!
Aaron Kritz. He came from England, and he was a wonderful singer. My whole side of the family are artists.
Yeah.
And
look at that.
This is his record. He was.
Cantor Aaron Kritz.
Yeah.
Cantor Aaron Kritz. Very cool. This is your mom's side or your dad's side?
That's my dad's side. That's my grandmother. Who married Perkins, who was Jewish, by the way. They changed his name at Ellis Island. But yeah, we're Fiddler on the Roof fans.
Look at that. Fiddler on the Roof is a classic. I mean, my goodness. Yep. You know, if you're in New York, like you, Chicago too, big on theater, very big on theater.
Oh yeah, no. I've performed in high school, college, and a little bit of things even recently. And one of the worst things about COVID is Shane Ota. I think he was at some of my music jam parties. I really miss. I'm not good enough to be professional, but I have a nice voice and I enjoy doing it. And
Robert, you're setting yourself up right now because I am going to ask you to perform and then probably live stream this.
All right.
Just want to let you know this is what's going
to happen.
A performer is talking to a performer. So there's that, you know. So
okay. I do the entertainment visas, and Shane, actually, our mutual friend, he does a lot of them. A lot of them as well. But the nice thing about working in LA is I get to work with artists. I had a lovely, I don't know if she's watching. I posted on Facebook, but a lovely Israeli singer who's extremely talented, who came to one of my parties and I got to do a duet with her. And so sometimes through doing my work, I get to see artists or get a little bit of insight and everything. And that's kind of fun too. Yeah.
Sure. Shane said, immigration law becomes a part of life. I'm working on an I-601A, is that it? Waiver tonight to keep a husband, his wife, and their child together. My God, well, good luck with that, Shane. I hope it all works out and I hope they get to stay together. Goodness. And Shane is saying that you're a very good dancer too. So Robert, it's just, there's a lot of stuff that's being revealed right now.
There's a lot of stuff. I'm developing a fan club. Shane and Petra are going to be the president and vice president.
Can I be the Secretary of State? Is that?
Of course.
Can I take up a role in that?
Yes, you're hired.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm deeply honored. I actually wanted to ask you, we were talking about immigrants and how you said how, you know, Eastern European immigrants have helped build Chicago.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, right now, I don't know if you're following the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, and how quickly it's, you know, Pfizer is, you know, basically working day and night. I mean, they have a 90% done. So at this point, they're just asking the FDA. It's going to go to the FDA, and they have to review the paperwork and all that.
Right.
And I was reading, who are the two doctors that are behind it? Are Turkish immigrants, husband and wife. Well, look at that. Hi, Gavalt. Look at this.
Hi, Gavalt.
Oh, my goodness. Look at this. Immigrants coming to the rescue to help develop vaccine in America. Look at that for a pandemic. Ain't that something?
Amazing. It doesn't surprise me in the least bit. And yep.
Listen, even even your MacBook, your iPhone, Steve Jobs was a child of two Syrian students. There were two Muslims.
Really?
Yeah, they were Muslim. His parents,
I didn't know that.
His biological parents were Muslim, and they gave him up for adoption because they were very young when they had him. They gave him up for adoption, and he got adopted by a Jewish family.
Wow. Okay, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, immigrants built our nation, and I. You know, while we do have a larger population now, I agree there's definitely some issues with a lot of immigration, but I believe we still have the capacity to accept a lot of immigrants. And I think what we need, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, is mindfulness. You know, if LA has more than enough of one thing, let's try some other places and support the aging population. And I think we need to be the top scientifically and everything else. I mean, that's something that has hugely been a part of our DNA in the United States. I mean, look at, you know, all these scientists that came over and you know, developed space program and everything else, a lot of them were from other countries. And
that's right. That's right. Absolutely. Take the best of the best. I mean, that's what America has prided itself for the longest time. So, Robert, I'm going to ask you a devil advocate question. You know, we have another 10-15 minutes to go. So, being South Asian, being Pakistani, for us, it's not that easy to come to America. For us, we are what we. For us, it's like we say we cross seven seas. We there's a saying with us. We have to cross seven seas to come to America. And there's a sentiment among immigrants who come from Asia, South Asia, maybe even Middle East, that why don't you come here legally? This is an argument that people make, which fascinates me. Because for us, we have to be, we have to have degrees, we have to have your master's, bachelor's, you have to be highly educated to come to America and have any kind of status. So a lot of the immigrants from that part of the world get really irritated and get really pissed off and upset and kind of become Trumpers in a way. And they're like, why are the folks coming from other countries where they're not doing the right thing like we did?
It's honestly become, because they haven't changed the laws, things have become horribly backlogged. Let's say, for example, I'm a U.S. citizen, you're my sister, and you're in the Philippines. You know how long you'd have to wait if I file a petition for you? 23 years or so.
Woo!
In the Philippines. Same thing, for example, let's say I'm a U.S. citizen. You're my daughter. You're living in Israel. I want a petition for you. How much the wait is? 6-7 years. You know, even to get a tourist visa, people don't know these things because they're not living those things every day. And that's why they make these statements. You know, and you may know this. Let's just say you're in a third world country like Mexico or Central America or whatever.
Pakistan is a third world country.
Pakistan is not as developed as it. Yeah, right. And so I just had a consult client from Pakistan this morning, an investor person. But so it's hard to get a tourist visa. You know, over 98% of people are denied the right to even visit the United States.
98%?
It's something like that. I'm guesstimating, but it's definitely really hard. I don't know if any of my I posted this on Facebook, but I don't know if my Eastern European Facebook friends, I have a lot of them from back in the day, any of them are watching, but they know this too. Romania, Bulgaria, kind of second world countries, high denial rates. You know, and so it's hard to even visit. And most U.S. immigration, it's impossible for people to immigrate almost. Think about this. People on the street, they think, oh, they just had to fill out a form. Well, no.
If it were that simple, complicated. Oh, my God, Robert.
Right. If it were that simple, why would people risk their lives to go across the desert? And people do die. And people are raped and taken advantage of by coyotes and all kinds of horrible things. Families called and said, I have this person. Give me money, right? So, you know, why would people do that if that were that simple? It's not. And what it is let's just say you're a father in Guatemala, right? I have two kids. I'm a dad. And, you know, you're a father in Guatemala and you want to make it, you can't feed your kids. Are you going to cross an imaginary border to feed your kid? You are. You have to. And, you know, again, the issue is how we treat you. But getting back to it, can you immigrate? You won't get a tourist visa. You're poor. You don't have enough reason to come back to your country. I'm sorry, you won't get one. Could you work? Well, no, a company has to sponsor you. A company has to pay. It's around a $10,000 process to sponsor someone for a green card, and it takes at least 2 years. Are they going to do it for someone over there? And this, no, no. So that person cannot legally immigrate unless they have a parent who's a citizen, or a green card holder, a spouse, or a child. And most people don't have that. So, or a lot of money to invest. Right. So that person can't. Well, why didn't you do it the legal way? Well, they don't have a choice.
That's right.
You know, and so again, it becomes an issue of policy. I mean, George W. Bush tried to get a guest worker program. I mean, there are some Republicans that really understand the importance of immigration, the importance and vitality of that workforce, the importance of having smart people in our country. You know, I mean, unfortunately, the Republican Party has been taken over by Trump. What will happen to it going forward? I don't know. Yep. You know, I keep seeing posted on Facebook, you know, Ronald Reagan's last speech, you know, just a love letter to immigrants, you know, saying how he tells a story. He was a great storyteller. He tells a story about meeting somebody, a man who met somebody taking a boat, you know, somewhere in the world. And that person was from Germany and spoke perfect English. Mm-hmm. And he asked that person, well, you speak perfect English. How is that? Well, I lived in America for several years and I really miss it and this and that. And I love America and this and that. Well, that person was a prisoner of war and worked the crops in California and this and that, was treated so well by our country as a prison POW, learned the language and loved our country. And I hope and wish we can start to strive for that again. It just is so heartbreaking to me, and you know, to see what's happened. And I sincerely hope, no matter how it happens, that there is some serious change.
I 100% agree with it. I feel like, Robert, it's a battle between the old GOP and the new GOP. You know,
yeah.
Like people like John Kasich are still Mitt Romney. And just like you said, you don't agree with his policy, but he's still a bit of a decent human being. Like John Kasich is still he spoke of the DNC, for God's sake.
Yeah, you do have Republicans like that, you know, that really put country above politics. And I mean, I disagree with them. And there are some things about Kasich I definitely don't like, but and others too. But, you know, but at least they understand what the country is supposed to be about. Even if we may disagree on how to get there, certain policy and everything else, you know, these are patriots who have the interest of all of us at heart, you know, and you can reasonably disagree with people like that over a beer or a coffee or something at the end of the day. And, in terms of, you know, values and everything else, I just don't understand how the Trumpers share our values as Americans. I think they don't. And I think it's a serious problem. They think they do, but it's all surface. You know, MAGA and surface, and yeah, it's because they're filled with hate and insecurity.
Yes.
Yeah,
my son, I'm on a podcast right now and video.
Did your son ask you to come to dinner?
Well, my son and I, my son's very political too, so he's used to me talking politics.
Yes, I am.
I will talk to you after I'm done.
Yeah, we're wrapping up in like 1 minute, so I, you know, you can totally. I'm sorry, I hijacked your dad for so long.
My son's wanting my car keys, you know, and anyway.
That's what sons do. They want car keys.
That's what they do.
Robert, this has been such an incredible, enlightening, dynamic, fantastic conversation, mainly because of you. So thank you so much for taking the time and coming here and having this conversation. If people, where can people you know, go and see, you know, you said the immigrationprofessor.com, that's your website?
Yeah, that's our website. We do cases all over the country. Shane knows that I've always been a big video conference person, and now with COVID, even more so, it's more accepted. We do have offices in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Davenport, Iowa, of all places, and Chicago. And, but I have clients in Georgia. I have clients a lot in Northern California, by the way. Yep. And, all over the United States and all over the world. So, but it's immigrationprofessor.com. That's probably the easiest way. And we also do Facebook Live events every few weeks on different areas of immigration law. We have our Ask the Professor, kind of event where people can ask questions and get them answered. So appreciate the plug, and it's delightful to talk to a kindred soul. And thank you for having me.
It was lovely meeting you, but this is not our last time. We're definitely going to bring you back again soon, so just so you know.
I would be delighted.
You're not getting rid of me that easy. And we're going for pastrami sandwiches, so there's also that.
Ooh. Oh, yes. Oh, bagels and lox. That's right.
Bagels and lox. Let's do it. I'm all about that life. Let's do it.
Are you a pastrami person?
I'm a pastrami girl.
You know, I haven't tried it, but there's a famous place where I live in Culver City, right outside of L.A. And
we're not that far. We're not.
Yeah. Johnny's Pastrami.
Okay.
Well, famous.
Really?
I know the corned beef is good. See, being a Jewish guy, I'll tell you, the corned beef is good.
Okay. I have nothing against brisket, corned beef, pastrami. Sign me up. I'm down.
You're down?
I'm down. I'm down for
all right.
Robert, right. It has been a pleasure. I will not hijack you any further, so you can give the keys to your kid.
He's sitting there staring at me.
I can feel the heat on your face of how he's staring at you.
On my face.
That's why I found the turkeys.
Yeah. Oh, you found the guy. All right.
There it is. Robert, thank you so very much. I will speak to you soon, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right. Be well.
Thank you.
Very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you, too. Take care.
Ciao.
That was an incredible conversation with the lovely and amazing Robert Perkins, who clearly we're like friends now. We're like buddies. So if you haven't checked out, if you have immigration needs, please do check out the Immigration Professor. I mean, Robert seems to cover so many different facets of immigration. So please do visit their website, check out their Facebook Lives, check out their social media. That is all on their website. I will be back tomorrow with a brand new guest, with a comedian friend who is amazing and killing it in the Bay Area. But if you haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, it would mean the world to me. I bring on fantastic guests like Robert and try to have really in-depth, dynamic conversations about hot topics. So this is what I do. You can follow me on my YouTube at Mona Shea Comedian. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mona's Comedy. You can follow me on Facebook at Mona Shea Comedian. And I will see you tomorrow at 6:15 Pacific. Have a good night.